Coming to you live from the Eastern Shore Toyota and Hyundai Studios. The Prep Sports Report, presented by Alpha. Here are your hosts, Coach Rick Cleveland, Coach Mark Lasseter, and Corey Labounty.
Good morning and welcome to the Prep Sports Report presented by Alpha and coming to you live from the Eastern Shore Toyota and Hyundai Studios right here in the heart of Mobile, Alabama. Coming to you also live from WYEA 106.5 Sylacauga and 105.1 The Lake, covering 43,000 acres of beautiful clear water that Mark Lasseter and I so richly enjoy and always have. Good morning, Corey Labounty.
Good morning, Coach. Always a pleasure to join you 52 weeks of the year on the Prep Sports Report.
Mark Lasseter, good morning, Coach.
Good morning, good morning. Hope everybody's doing well this morning.
Well, you know, guys, lots of things going on, particularly in high school basketball as we get into tournament play now. And I know, Corey, you follow that probably as closely as anybody. And but a couple of things that heavy on our heart here this morning. We want to say a couple of things about some people that are near and dear to the show, but more so really close to Corey. Coach William Bell, the head women's basketball coach at Winona High School in Birmingham, and a man that's been a friend of this show for many years and who made a difference in lots and lots and lots and lots of lives during his journey here on this earth, passed away this week. Cancer, got another one of the good guys. And Corey, I know it's been a tough week for you and for all the basketball coaches that had a relationship with Coach Bell and those of us who knew him from the outside perimeter looking in. He's a man who made a significant difference and a positive difference in so many lives in that Metro Birmingham area and throughout the state of Alabama through his association with women's AAU basketball.
Without question, and he'll be laid to rest today in Birmingham, and they had visitation for him yesterday. Just an outpouring love of support in the Birmingham and Winona Dragon family, and again, he just made a difference in so many lives, and we'll talk to Coach Ulysses Hayes from Center Point High School in the next segment, just reflecting on his life and getting us informed about Birmingham basketball and North Alabama basketball as we start our sub-regional play, Coach.
You know, the thing about, you know, when Coach Bell passed away, I thought about this a good bit after last Saturday's show, and I was thinking about that. You know, the great thing about Coach Bell was that his life touched so many more, and we will all miss him. But he still lives on in the lives of thousands of children that he has helped and influenced. And those are the memories that we're going to have to cherish and hold on to, the things that he's done. I mean, one of the most endearing pictures I remember right off the bat was the one not from about a month ago with one of his girls jumping up in his arms and after a big victory. And, you know, that's the kind of coach he was, the kind of mentor he was. And so as hard as it is to let go of him, as we grieve, the time comes when we start to say, man, thank you, Coach, for the memories you put in my heart, and a better man than I am today because I knew you.
Well, there's no question about that, because as you look throughout the Birmingham area and you talk to basketball coaches up there, he not only made a difference in Winona children, he made a difference in just about every young lady who played basketball in that area, because he always had something kind to say to them. It was always something positive and always something kind. And you know, as you talk to him, as we talked to him and visited with him on our show here, you could tell the passion that he had for the young children that he coached and for the game of basketball. And as I've listened to Corey talk about him and speak about him, I've learned more and more that those coaches, and it reminds me of Cap Brown at Parker, who was just in a similar vein, who loved those kids. I mean, that was his life. And, you know, faith, family, and basketball. That's what it was for William Bell. And it was, and those girls that played for him, that was part of his family. That was just exactly part of his family. So our sympathy certainly goes out to the Bell family and the entire Birmingham community that had relationships with Coach Bell. Corey, I know that it's been a tough time for you, but at the same time, we know that through our faith that there is life, and there's an abundant life, and that God creates that, and we are blessed to have him walk through our corridors of life, But I know and I believe in everything that we say and everything that we do that there's a better life ahead, and he's no longer suffering, and that he will his impact will continue, Mark. His legacy will live on for years and years and years through the young people that he coached and made a difference in. I can assure you of that. On another hand, right here at FM Talk 106.5, one of the men who just does an amazing job here for FM Talk 106.5, very close to everybody on the staff here, Rennie Bradner. We send out our condolences to his entire family. They lost their 3-year-old granddaughter this week. Hartley Bradner. 1-year-old. I'm sorry, 1-year-old. Just a terrible, terrible tragedy that it's unfathomable to think about the pain that this family's going through. 1-year-old Hartley Bradner passed away this week, and it's been kind of a sad, sad week here at this location. And just pray that God's grace will sustain Rennie and his family during this most difficult time, guys.
Yeah, absolutely, Coach. You know, it's just we never understand why children pass away. It's a hard, hard thing to do. It's hard for me to wrap my arms around it, but all I know is that, what better place did she go, to went home in the loving arms of our Lord and Savior, and that's the thing that I have to kind of hold on to when I hear of things like this, and we just pray for the family and getting through this very, very difficult time.
All right, so couple things as we move forward, and we have to move forward, and it's during difficult days, and Scripture teaches us that we must move forward, and we must pray for the those that survive, and that God will give them the strength to sustain them during these most difficult hours. But guys, as we move into basketball, there are a couple of other things going on. I know that the St. Paul's had their day in court Thursday, I think, Corey, in their suit against the Alabama High School Athletic Association, which we're all watching closely, because we think this is going to make a significant impact on the future of the Alabama High School Athletic Association. Don't know which way, what future it's going to hold. But those of us who know a little bit about the case and what's going on think that it's going to make a significant impact one way or the other. And so I know, Corey, you followed that a little bit. I know that Thursday they had their day in court, and I think the judge has given them like a 10-day period to present some arguments or of some kind.
Yeah, Judge Moore wanted both sides to file that 10-page brief by February 15th, summarizing both of their arguments, and he'll take a look at those briefs and then come away with his ruling afterwards. So again, once this ruling is made, it could possibly shake up the way things are done in the AHSAA. It could shake up classifications and schedules. And of course, there's always the appeal process with any type of ruling or decision that possibly will be made here upcoming.
I thought, Mark, one of the things that was interesting about what Judge Moore asked, he asked both lawyers a series of questions, and I want to go through a little bit of that and see, kind of get your opinion on this. He asked the one of the attorneys, he said, why wouldn't increasing the multiplier from 135 to a higher number be enough to promote balance without the competitive balance factor? And the reply to that, which I thought was a good reply, was saying the solution would have affected more private schools across the board, while the competitive balance factor was more narrowly tailored to those that were having ultimate success.
Right.
I thought that's a great answer.
It is a great answer, and that's the way it is. And the thing that I can't get around in this whole deal is that if you're having success, you have to move up, and to what? Cause you not to have success, or to put you in a place where you compete at a different level? I'm not sure what that is. I understand a little bit about the size of it, but the competitive balance and the multiplier, is too much, in my opinion. I think it's just too much. I think it's too much going on there. And if you're going to do competitive balance, put it for every school in the state of Alabama.
Well, and I think that's the plan. I think the Alabama High School Athletic Association wants to do that. It's just got to be approved by all the member schools. And I think that's the
thing.
And
I don't know if it's going to pass.
I don't know if it will either. And you know, the thing we all have to keep in mind in this is the schools. All of the schools are the one who make the rules. The Alabama High School Athletic Association is the executive branch, and all they do is carry out the wishes of the schools. So we'll see how this turns out. A couple of other things we'll talk about later on. I want to ask you and Corey something else a little later on. I ride by Bay Bear Stadium all the time, and the Bay Bears are gone after this spring season. What are we going to do with that? And Dalt may even have some insight on that, because I'd make a great high school football stadium, I think. We'll be back with more right here on Prep Sports Report.
The CNC Financial and Auto Sales communication lines are open at 251-343-0106. This segment of the Prep Sports Report, presented by Green & Phillips Attorneys at Law. Now, back to the show.
I seen your picture.
As I was listening to you guys going to Sanford last Saturday, I'm saying, let that music play. Let Steely Dan go. And I get a lot of people who tell me that too, say, Coach, we enjoy that so much. Of course, it's older people. sure do appreciate you all taking care of all that for us. We talked a little earlier about Coach William Beal. And the passing of Coach William Beal at Winona High School in Birmingham, friend of the show, friend of, course, special friend of Corey's, and another buddy of his who has spent lots and lots of hours with William Beal is Ulysses Hayes. Haynes from Center Point High School in the Birmingham metro area. Coach, good morning. How you doing, pal?
Good morning. How you doing?
Doing
and
well.
Not to be so crass, it's Emmanuel.
I apologize. We're looking at, you know, we look at a screen. And
yeah, it's no big deal.
Well,
it's
it no is to deal. Us. We want to get you right because we appreciate everything that you do. And we certainly know that it's been a tough week for a lot of folks and girls and women's and high school basketball around the state of Alabama with the passing of Coach Beal.
Yes, he was a special man. He did a lot for me over the past 20 years. Been friends, opponents. Coached together, so he's done a lot for me. He was an outstanding man. Did a lot for the community. Did a lot for Winona High School. Did a lot for the state of Alabama as far as girls basketball and boys basketball. He's one of the guys that got me with Nike Girls, along with the late Coach Scoggins, who started me with Nike. Then I got with Coach Beal, and from there we bonded a huge friendship.
Coach Haynes, you're the head coach at Center Point High School right there in Birmingham. So right now that seems to be the epicenter of basketball and, of course, where the state finals take place. You look at your Center Point Lady Eagles, and you guys were able to win the Area 10 championship over Springville. You now move on to the sub-regional play. Tell us a little bit about your team and how North Alabama basketball has been going so far.
Well, this year been a struggle. I'm really young. I only have one senior, so it's been kind of rough, but the girls have, as it went on, we've had some ups and downs. You know, every team has ups and flows, and we've been pretty good lately when the area tournament started. So, and our schedule helps us a lot because we played the number two team in 7A, the number one team in 6A, we played number five team in 6A, we played the number seven team in 7A. Number five team in 5A. So, you know, we played, and then we played the number one team out of Georgia, Collins Hill. So that got us ready for our area. And we did pretty good, and we matched up with Etowah on Monday at 7 o'clock, and hopefully we'll come out victorious. But basketball up in North Alabama, Birmingham and up in Huntsville is very, very powerful. I started at J.O. Johnson, and when I got to Irwin, with Mr. Phillips. It's basketball. Good girls basketball is really tough up this way. They really work throughout the summer. It's a good thing going on these days. And I just hope we just keep it going.
I want to also talk to you, you know, as we're laying Coach Bell to rest today, you spoke about what he meant in your life. I know the 20-plus years that I've had an opportunity to know you and coach against you and coach with you, along with Coach Bell. There's been many players that, you know, you've ultimately been that father figure to. What do you feel will be Coach Bell's biggest legacy that he will leave, not only for the adults, but for the kids that he had an opportunity to coach as well?
Well, the biggest legacy is just going to be that, what you just said, father figure Tubbs, as they call him, Big Daddy, Big Man, all those nicknames he had. It's just one of those things where his job, and he got me to buy into that, was just to get kids in school. It was nothing else but just to get kids in school. That was the main focus. It was never about where they went to school. It was just about free schooling, and he did a wonderful job doing that, and he got me to buy into that, and that's what I preach, and I got it from him. It was just about getting kids in school, and over the years he's gotten so many young ladies in school. It's amazing. And you know, to name a few people that was under his watch, you know, he had Dewana Bonner, Kanisha Horn, you know, he had so many kids. You know, and then we collaborated, the Roadrunners and the Lasers, when I was in Huntsville, the Nike team, we collaborated. That came Allie Smalley, Sherelle Hobbs, Renisha Hobbs, Mika Thrash, Simone Kennedy, you know, Catherine Graham. The list goes on and on. And all these kids are SEC kids. Then you have, you know, Christian Lee, you know, it's just so many kids that he helped, you know, that he made me realize how to help kids. And it was just amazing how our whole motto was just getting them in school free. It was never about how big you went. It was just about getting free schooling and becoming a better person in the community.
And I think you've done an outstanding job in collaborating with Coach Bell and helping those young ladies to achieve their further college careers, whether it be junior college, Division 3, 2, 1, it doesn't matter. Just seeing those young ladies have an opportunity to continue that legacy in education is very important. Coach, I'm going to ask you these last couple of minutes. Favorites in classifications, you look at Hazel Green probably being one of the best overall girls basketball programs in the entire state of Alabama, but I know Hoover is one of the favorites to try to bounce back. Spain Park is your defending state champion. You look in 6A, there's some great basketball being played there as well. Ramsey is one of the favorites. So when you look at the state of girls basketball, who are your favorites trying to win the regionals and possibly being upset in trying to get to the Final Four?
Well, the two biggest are going to be in the south of Montgomery with Ramsey and Charleston. That's going to be a huge matchup, because I think those are the two going to be in the regional finals down there. That's going to be a huge, huge matchup. I lean toward Ramsey because of their speed and their quickness and maybe pressure on the ball, but it's going to be a tall task since Maury is back playing. It's going to be a tall task to defend her, and that point guard is a major college basketball player. The coach's daughter, she's a major college basketball player, so that was going to be a big test. And then we know to go on to Hansville is probably going to end up facing Madison Academy, which that's going to be a big matchup because, you know, the girls have something else to play for. You know, with Coach Bell passing, it's in their hearts, and they're going to try to get them another one. And they're going to be fighting hard. And that Madison Academy team is very good with Destiny going to Arkansas and the Langford's sister. So that's going to be a good matchup. In Jacksonville, I don't think anyone can beat Hazel Green. I just don't. I played them in the summer, and I played them this year. I don't think anyone can beat them in 6A coming out of Jacksonville. I think Central will come out the other one down in Mobile 5A. I don't know if it might be upset down there. I don't know because who is it I'm thinking of? Shelby County is playing real well.
Right.
So they might have a say. In Jacksonville in 5A, hopefully I get there, and hopefully I can pull out a Bruin Scottsboro. I know will be two people I'll see. Hopefully I can get out of that one. I think Pittsburgh's going to end up. I think Pittsburgh will end up back in the finals. Hopefully they have that young lady, Annie. They're going to do well. I expect to see Pleasant Homes again. Priceville, with the young lady up in Priceville, I expect to see them in Birmingham. So it's going to be interesting. Midfield come out of Birmingham. I think they can get to the BJCC. Of course, McGill down in Mobile. I think that they're going to get there along with Davidson. That's going to be a good task. But those are, you know, and Spain Park will come out of 7A in Jacksonville. But those are the ones that pops out at me.
Coach, I want to tell you how much Mark Laster, Rick Cleveland, Corey LeBounty appreciate you joining us this morning, and thank you for your kind words about Coach Bell. Of course, I know they're heartfelt, and your knowledge about high school basketball, particularly women's basketball around the state of Alabama, is unmatched, and we certainly appreciate that, and we look forward to talking to you again soon, pal.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Y'all have a great day.
Take care, Coach. We'll be back with more PSR right here on Radio Alabama, coming to you live from the FM Talk Studios. Right here in Mobile, Alabama.
The Prep Sports Report is brought to you by Future Ones, providers of practice apparel and scout team jerseys with interchangeable numbers. Now, back to the show.
Jack and Diane painted a picture of my life and my dreams. Suddenly this crazy world made more sense to me.
Boy, get it, Chesty. I'm just,
this crazy world made more sense to me.
Yeah, Chuck and Diane. That's, every time wow. I hear that song. You know, Corey, we've got some local scores. I know that you've got some local scores from local basketball. I was thinking about my buddy Terry Canova over at UMS and his girls. His girls played an area tournament game, and four of the five starters were out with the flu. And, boy, they battled and battled and battled and just came up and hit a three-point shot. W.S. Neal hit a three-point shot. They were down by two as time was running out on the clock, and Canova and the UMS Wright girls lose at the buzzer after being up by two, and just they threw a shot up and it went in. Things like that happen this time of year, don't they, guys?
It's that February frenzy.
Happened last night at McGill 2 and Fairhope game.
Really?
A putback shot. Beat Fairhope. McGill upsets.
No.
I would call it a push because they split during
the season. Fairhope kind of controlled the ball game all
night
long.
Right.
And, McGill gets a putback at the end of the game with, 6.6 seconds to go?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it's an amazing situation.
Those two have battled all year long.
Split during the regular season, and that's what you could ask for. Yeah. I mean, you know, they have a chance with 7A basketball, both advanced to the regional finals now. And, you know, here are some scores just mentioning that buzzer beater. You had Baker win the Area 1 championship 64-60 over Theodore last night. And you mentioned the 7A Area 2 championship. McGill Tulin comes from behind and wins 54-53 over Fairhope. 6A Area 1 boys, Blount defeated BC Rain 62-49. The 6A Area 2 championship will be at Daphne tonight at 7 o'clock p.m. It'll be round 3 of that great rivalry series, Daphne and Spanish Fort from Daphne High School. 5A Area 1 championship will be held tonight at LaFleur High School at 7:30. LaFleur versus Vigor. That's going to be a great game tonight, so expect a packed house at LaFleur tonight. 5A Area 2 championship went to the Jackson Aggies. They defeat Wilcox Central 76-74. The 4A Area 1 championship will be held tonight also at Williamson High School. They'll be taking on Escambia County. Escambia County was able to defeat the UMS Wright men's team in a close game, and that was to me the best matchup in the whole state of Alabama, because you had three ranked teams in the top 10 in the state of Alabama, and a good team was going to go home in the first round of the area tournament. Williamson versus Escambia County tonight at 7 o'clock p.m. The 3A Area 1 champions, congratulations to the Mobile Christian Leopards. They defeat Bayside Academy last night 53-38. 2A Area 1 champions goes to the Cottage Hill Warriors. They defeat Chickasaw by 20, 48-28. And the 1A champions are St. Luke's. They defeat McIntosh 63-51 in boys basketball.
You know, when you talk about the Fairhope-McGill game, something really unfortunate happened in that game. There was a technical foul called with 6 seconds to go in the game, Corey.
Yeah, it's one of those situations to where, again, if, according to what I was told, that there was an elbow
right.
that was thrown and it made contact with the player, whether it was intentional or unintentional, you know, it's by rule, by letter
sure
of the law.
Yeah.
If that contact is made, you have to make that call. And in that situation, the officials made what they felt was the right call at the time, and it came down to McGill Tulane ultimately trailing by 3 points to tie in the game, and then ultimately having that putback basket that allowed him to win the game. So you just love to see high school basketball go down to the wire. Two great teams that don't want to lose. You hate to see it come down to a call like that, but when you have two competitive teams going at it, it does happen.
Yeah, and you got to maintain your composure. I mean, you just that's just something I know coaches stress all the time. You get down in situations like that, you got to maintain your composure, and you just can't let you just cannot do that. And that's a tough one. You know, the thing about that game was a freshman. I think the young man's name was Barry Dunning, was the one that tipped the ball in or put the ball back and for the final bucket for the McGill Tulane Yellow Jackets. 54-53 over Fairhope. They'll both move on. Is that right, Corey? Or
yes.
Yeah,
yes, in 7A, they definitely move on.
So they'll be a tough out. Both of those will be a tough out for somebody, I can assure you.
I agree, and that was an outstanding game. And you look at the girls' side last night, there was some good basketball being played on the girls' side as well in the 7A Area 1 Championship. The Davidson Lady Warriors were able to defeat Theodore 45-34. In 7A Area 2, McGill Tulane beat Foley 74-39. So McGill's boys and girls are both area champions. In Area 1 girls basketball in 6A classification, Blount defeated BC Raines 61-43. In 6A Area 2, here's something you don't see that often. The Gulf Shores Lady Dolphins are 6A Area 2 champions. They defeated Robertsdale 43-36. In 5A Area 1, Faith Academy defeated Vigra 55-39. In 5A Area 2, the Jackson Lady Aggies, they walked all over Wilcox Central 60-22. In 4A, the Williamson Lady Lions defeat W.S. Neal 48-40 at UMS Wright High School, who was the host team. In 3A, the Bayside Lady Admirals defeated St. Michael's 29-24. In 1A, you look at in 1A, St. Luke's defeated McIntosh 75-57. And your 2A, Area 1 champions, congratulations to the Cottage Hill Lady Warriors. They're also area champions.
I want to give out a shout-out to my good friend, Brittany. Here I go again. Every time I'm going to call Brittany's name, her last name gets crazy with me. Brittany Davidson from Bayside Academy, just a tremendous, tremendous coach. And I'm just so proud of what she's done there and just took her kids. She was missing Jackie, one of her best players in the game the other night. And St. Michael's girls, they had quite a battle. For the second time in a row, the game went into overtime to finish it up. And it was quite a game. And I'm just so proud of Coach Brittany and her team and what they did to win the area championship. It was a great night to win in overtime, and proud for those girls.
You know, Mark, we're talking a lot of basketball, but also right now the sectional wrestling tournaments are going on throughout the state of Alabama.
Yeah, they are. And I looked at some of the scores. You know, it gets kind of it's a lot different than it used to be. And as I read through that, they've got the North and South super sectionals going on right now, and this is following the team dual championships, which took place a week ago or 2 weeks ago. Was it last week we talked?
Last week.
I think it was last Thursday and Friday they wrestled in those tournaments and got the dual team tournament. This tournament, they still keep team points, but it's done on a more individual. Nature.
Yeah.
You know, a dual team tournament, try to clarify this, a dual team tournament would be like Spanish Fort and Fairhope playing each other the whole time for that game, for the team
right.
score. what this does, this is like more like a tennis tournament, yep. you know, or a golf tournament, where the kids go out and they individually compete, but they keep a team score.
Yeah, we what you have is you have individual champions and a team champion.
And a team champion.
And that's what that's something that we kind of mandated 15 years ago because the Alabama High School Athletic Association wanted to be able to recognize more state champions individually and team-wise.
Right.
We went to seven classifications. We go to individual state champions in our spring sports like tennis and golf, and now we're doing that in wrestling. So what we're doing is we're just kind of following the same lead and trying to be as consistent across the board as we can with all the sports.
Absolutely, and I think it's been a big deal, and I think this has helped wrestling because it's grown.
Yeah.
You know, it's so good for me to look on the score sheet and see Spanish 4. I think they're right now in third or fourth place in 6A division, and Fairhope is not quite as high as it was. Spanish 4 was, I think Fairhope competed in the 7A division, but it's good for me to see. I saw Gulf Shores listed on there. And, you know, when I was coaching this sport, I never saw anybody from down this area. So it's just really nice to see teams around here wrestling.
I think about our buddy Charlie Williamson, who is retired at Jeff Davis out of Montgomery. And he's been in Fairhope for quite some time now. And he's going over to Fairhope and volunteer coaching that wrestling team. Doing a great job. Doing a great job with those kids. And, you know, it just gives more kids an opportunity to compete, especially the smaller kids. The smaller kids that can't play another sport, they can dead gum sure wrestle.
Yeah.
And that's fun to watch those young kids, those younger, smaller kids get out there and wrestle and compete and grow. And that's just a, that's a
I'll
great
tell you
thing.
A quick story. Y'all all know Andy Ryan, basketball coach at Saraland, and we were playing when he was my first job, he was a ninth grader at Hewitt Trussville Junior High School.
Really?
And I was coaching the wrestling team, and a coach named Donnie Slayton coached our junior high basketball game. And Donnie got mad at his basketball team, so he brought Andy and the basketball team in there one day, and we rolled the mats up, and the wrestling team played the basketball team in a basketball game. And because he didn't think his team was being physical enough. We had a big old heavyweight named Doug Jenkins, weighed about 240 pounds. He played in the paint, and it was bang him up, and Andy's telling me, he says, he told Coach Slayton, said, Coach, don't ever do that again. I think we beat him. We had a couple little kids who could really, really play basketball, too, but they were small.
Yeah.
But they were better wrestlers. But I don't know if we beat them or not. But it was a great – it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I bet it was.
And it brought our two teams together.
Yeah.
It really did. It was really good stuff.
Anyway. You speak of Andy Ryan. Not only is Andy Ryan an accomplished basketball coach, he's a doggone good football coach.
He absolutely is. He coached with me at Fairhope for a little while. And he just did a great job.
Yeah, he does a good job. But tell you what, we're running out of time here. Let's go to the CNC communication lines and talk to Glenn over from Christ United Methodist Church. Good morning, Glenn. I'm sorry we got to you late.
Oh, that's right. No problem. I just wanted to ask you a quick question. Is it true that nobody from UMass Wright got picked by any SEC teams this year for the first time in football?
Well, no.
Did
it's
I hear
not,
that right?
It's not the first time. We hadn't had a lot of kids sign in the SEC. We just don't have a lot that sign. I mean, we have really good high school football players.
Yeah.
But, you know, the last one we had signed, I think, was Jay Price, who signed with Auburn.
There's going to be one next year.
Yep. Hold on. Let's let Glenn tell us anything. Nothing going on special this Sunday at Christ, right?
It's tomorrow.
Tomorrow, okay.
Tomorrow will be our 11th. And it's sensory-friendly. It's for people of all abilities, but it's geared towards a special needs community.
Right.
And then Gene Tibbett will be the speaker tomorrow. I was teased, it must be hard to come up with an 8-minute sermon when you're used to doing a 30-minute sermon.
That's true.
It is.
We got to get out of here, Glenn. Thanks,
thank
buddy.
You, Glenn.
Take care.
Thank you, buddy.
Blessings. We'll be right back.
This segment of the Prep Sports Report, brought to you by Parker Dental and Orthodontics. PSR is live every Saturday from 8 until 10 a.m. Now back to Coach Rick Cleveland.
All right, welcome back to PSR. Radio Alabama, Corey the Bounty, Mark Laster, and Rick Cleveland. Dalt Doring runs this show, keeps us all straight 52
all
weeks
straight.
Out of the year. I can promise you that. We had a lot of people local that signed. I don't hear a lot from, and I know Wayne down in Sylacauga and all our listeners all around the southeast that listen to us. I know that there's a lot of people that sign from your areas, and we kind of are privy to this information right here locally, We'd love to hear from you. You can text us at 251-343-0106. You can tell us your local signees, but we're going to kind of go through these that have signed football scholarships here and some other sports. We got some other really tremendous athletes that signed and some other sports, but we're going to give you these right now. From Baker High School, Josh Pruitt goes to Navy. Cameron Barnes to the Cumberlands. Trey Simmons, Hutchinson Community College, and Jeremiah Buenstra. That's got me. Burastro goes to Bellhaven. Baldwin County has three. Javis Atchison to Dodge City. Giovanni Hayes to Dodge City. And Jonathan Norris to the Cumberlands. BC Reigns, Jonathan Williams goes to Alabama A&M. Blunt's Chabrat Bradley to Alabama A&M. DeCameron Johnson goes to Mike Turk at Huntington. Cobe McCovery to Coffeyville Community College out in Kansas that we're familiar with, Mark. Zodrick Milligan from also from Blount to Alabama A&M. Justin Traynor from Blount, Alabama State. And Eric Williams also from Blount to Alabama A&M. Corey, I just asked you about this young man from Chickasaw, A.J. Phillips. He signed with South Alabama, and that's probably a really good pickup for those guys to get a local kid.
It is. I mean, he's a phenomenal athlete, plays basketball as well. Saw him play last night against Cottage Hill, and they're just going to – he's a tremendous athlete, played both ways for Chickasaw, but I think he'll play a great linebacker position for South Alabama.
Chris Grissett, a wide receiver, goes to West Alabama, and then our buddy
Wasden.
Tommy Wasden signs three guys from Chickasaw to Carlos Taylor, Cornette Beard, and Quentin Brackett. So that's a good pickup there for Tommy up at Faulkner. And then out at Citronelle, Joeffrey Hutcherson goes to West Alabama. Aaron Belt goes to LaGrange. Here's one for you, Dalt. Clark County, Jason Ivory goes to Memphis. That's a good pickup.
Mm-hmm.
Cottage Hill has a couple of preferred walk-ons. Flip Rudolph goes to UAB, and Corey Alexander goes to Jacksonville State. Daphne has another large group of signees. Marion Collins goes to Harding College. Jamar Mason to Fort Scott Community College. Nate Getch goes to Huntington to play for Mike Turk. Ronnie Cleveland goes to Alabama A&M. Diego Guardo's a kicker going to South Alabama. C.J. Young going to Alabama A&M, and here's the big one. They're all big. They're all big for their families. But this is one that kind of flipped us all over in Daphne. Christian Williams, who had committed to
Alabama,
flipped it and goes to Miami. He's going to go down there and play for Manny Diaz. And do you think that Dan Enos going there had anything to do with that?
You know, I don't know. I don't know who was recruiting him from Alabama.
Well, Dan would not have had much to do with him because being the offensive coordinator and Christian playing in the secondary, I would think that would be a strange relationship as far as recruiting goes.
I don't really know what happened there, but, you know, Christian, he made his decision to go to Miami, and I hope it works out for him.
Oh, I do, too.
Great to have I don't know if any other Daphne kids that I know have been to Miami.
I that's a good question. I don't know any that have gone to Miami. He did say he fell in love there. He just loved the places, the coaches, the players, the scheme, everything about it was a perfect fit for him. And, you know, he's visited. Now, I know that Christian, because I know some of his buddies, said that he had visited Texas A&M and LSU in the past couple of weeks. So he was. I don't know that he was ever really a hard commitment to Alabama. Corey, did you ever feel that coming from him?
No, I just know that when he said he wanted to take more visits, you kind of knew that there was probably a gray cloud over that. And during the Alabama Mississippi All-Star game, you felt stronger and stronger that he was no longer leaning toward Alabama. So
right,
I'm pulling for him. Another guy, you saw Malik Rozier do a wonderful job representing Mobile, Alabama at the U, and somebody else now can represent Miami or Mobile, Alabama at the U also.
Well, now that we're going to give you a little bit of Baldwin County stuff here. He's going to represent Daphne. I can promise you that's what they're going to get on me when I say he's not Mobile, he's Daphne. But it's okay. He's going to represent our area very well.
Right.
That's for sure. From Davidson, Jamal Dozier is going to the Cumberlands, James Atkins to West Alabama, and Timothy Johnson is going to Bellhaven. From Escambia Academy, Patrick McGee is going to Alcorn State. From Fairhope, Darnell Bales is a preferred walk-on at South Alabama. Faith Academy has Bob Batiste going to Faulkner and Timothy Cody also going to Faulkner. Foley has Drew McMillan going to Mississippi College. LaFleur's got Marquise Tatum going to Grambling. Christopher Holyfield going to Community Christian College along with Giacomico Nunn, both of them going to Community Christian College. Mary Montgomery's got Brady Faisal going to Mississippi College and Gabe Darrell going to Bellhaven. McGill Tulin, Ladarius Cox, who's one fine football player, guys. And, Corey, I've heard you talk about him a lot. Ladarius Cox, of course, signed with Ole Miss. Patrick Siebert and Reese Pitts with Faulkner. And Nick Ruggs are going as Nick Ruggs is going as a preferred walk-on out with Steve Campbell and those guys at South Alabama. Mobile Christian, it says Eric Poldnett signed with Alabama. Now, is that as a signee or is he a preferred walk-on, guys?
My understanding is a preferred walk-on.
Well, he's a heck of a football player. I know that.
I was thinking, man, that's a great pickup for Alabama.
That is a pickup. I mean,
because he's just going to get better and better and better. Yeah. And I've seen that kid run the football and catch the football against us the last couple of years. And he's a really, really good. I think he's mainly going as a kick returner.
Well,
I think the punt returner, kick returner is kind of what they're looking for him.
I think he's the kind of athlete they'll get him on the field in a lot of different ways. I mean, he's some kind of special athlete. Alex Moore, quarterback over at Mobile Christian's going to West Alabama, and Jordan Summerlin going to Huntington. For Murphy, Kendall Adams Young going to the Cumberlands, Tim Sanders to the Cumberlands, Christian Sellers, and Darnell Thomas also to the Cumberlands. From Robertsdale, Christian Akins going to West Alabama. From Saraland, boy, Jeff and those guys got a lot of kids going. Jay Williams to Southern Miss, Billy King and Trent Williams, along with Jalen Pugh to Huntington, Doug Sullivan to South Alabama's preferred walk-on, Kerry White to the Cumberlands, Jaden Roberson's going to the Cumberlands. Satsuma, Zach Brown's going to Faulkner. Spanish Fort's got DJ James going to Oregon. That's a strange one. DJ James has been one that we've talked about for a long time on here, and he's going all the way out to the West Coast to play for the old offensive line coach at Alabama. Mario Cristobal.
Yes, that's
right. He's going to play
Absolutely.
For Mario at Oregon. Nathan
he did a
Brown,
good job up there this year. They had sure a really did. Good job recruiting.
Nathan Brown to North Alabama. Chris Turbeville to Davidson in North Carolina. Ryan Duff and Mike Miller to Tuskegee. Matt Quinn, the kicker, of course. Young guy's been there for a long time, going to Bill Clark at UAB. And Connor Hagan is going to Mississippi State as a preferred walk-on. We'll finish up with Theodore and Viger when we come back. We'll be back for the second hour right here on Radio Alabama.
Live from the Eastern Shore Toyota and Hyundai Studios, it's the Prep Sports Report, presented by Alpha Insurance. Now, back to your hosts, Rick Cleveland, Mark Lasseter, and Corey LaBounty.
All right, welcome back to PSR and Radio Alabama. Been a big week in high school football. It's been a big week for college football, because high school football players had their second signing day, and all of us Auburn fans got Georgia on our mind because we lose a big one. I think the biggest loss of all, seriously, was losing George Pickens to Kirby Smart and the Georgia Bulldogs. Let's talk to John Garcia. And nobody knows it better than John Garcia. I was talking to a buddy of mine who... ESPN guy that's been on our show many times in the early years of our show, and he said, boy, Rick, when you get John Garcia on, you get one of the top young guys in our business. And so, John, that's a compliment coming from the top, buddy.
And, wow. And I appreciate it.
And that's good stuff. And I know as an Auburn guy, as a guy whose son played there and who thinks a lot of that school, losing George Pickens to Georgia, to me, is the one big loss nationwide on the board, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you know, I think on the surface, obviously, a massive loss, just verbatim, right? Five-star, number one type player in the state, arguably the best receiver in the country. Anytime you lose a guy like that, it stings. But with the way it went down, committed nearly 2 years, so familiar with Gus Malzahn, so familiar with fellow incoming prospect Bo Nix, and really saying all the right things along the way, and if anything, re-emphasizing his commitment once Gus Malzahn said, hey, I'm going to call the plays. Took multiple visits to Auburn down the stretch, including Sunday night after his Tennessee official visit. We're told he was on campus for 6 hours on Sunday, and then 3 days later signs with the Georgia Bulldogs. So I think the way it went down stings just as much as the on-paper look of an elite prospect changing his mind. So I think that was really tough for Auburn. But hey, Auburn really had a good day other than that. Added a lot of prospects who were on the bubble with other schools. Charles Moore, a top 100 defensive tackle. Octavius Brothers, a dynamic athletic linebacker out of South Florida who was really a late riser, and everybody kind of went in on there at the 11th hour. And then satisfied a big need with Kamar Bell, a big interior offensive lineman from South Georgia, Colquitt County High School, one of the top high schools in the South. So I think that sting is rough, but it could have been a lot worse. And then you added Mark Anthony Richards, who, you know, when you look back at this class, especially with Pickens not in it, outside of Bo Nix, this could be the most, you know, long-standing offensive contributor on this commitment list. So it was a really good day for Auburn if you take that away, but obviously hard to take that away when he's such a unique talent and he was committed for so long.
Without a question, when you also look on the Alabama side of things, I think that one of their biggest gets was Ishmael Sopcher from Louisiana, going into Louisiana's backyard and getting yet another strong player from the state of Louisiana. I want to say that Nick Saban knows exactly that he's playing chess and not checkers, even though he hasn't named a lot of his new assistant coaches as specific position coaches. They just want to be a part of the program that continues to put guys in the NFL on that next level. But Alabama, again, has the number one signing class in the country.
Yeah, you know, and the perception there was kind of up and down, too. It was kind of interesting, I think, because Alabama signed so many kids in December, 24, that no matter what happened, achieving this number one class wasn't going to take a lot. So they did get Sopcher, but, you know, they lost out on some guys that they were on the bubble for, much more so than Auburn did. So I think perceptionally it was kind of an up-and-down day, even though is it possible to have an up-and-down day if you clinch the number one class in America? So that's where perception and reality, I think, are fun to gauge from any perspective. But getting Sopcher was huge. You know, not only a position of need, heck, Bama signed six defensive linemen, and I think – almost half of them are going to have to contribute in some way, shape, or form now, which is a lot to ask those guys. So you got to get elite prospects, and I think four of them were in the top 100, including Sopcher. But to do it against LSU for Louisiana kid, you know, Ed Orgeron did a really good job in the state this cycle. Every elite kid, you know, for the most part, I think only two top 100 kids from Louisiana elected to go elsewhere, and they both ended up at Alabama. So if you're an LSU fan, that's the one school where you're like, okay, I mean, if we go 4 of 6 against Bama, you'll take that. And that's what Ed Orgeron actually did this cycle. So that led a lot of people to think that Sopcher was going to follow along and end up at LSU. But if there's one school, one area where we've seen in the last few years where Nick Saban doesn't miss, it's a meet high school in that area of Louisiana. That's where Devontae Smith came from as a five-star now a couple of years later. Ishmael Sopcher comes from there. I think Pete Golding, one of the assistants that did carry over and stay with Alabama, was big there. And Sam Petito, an off-the-field guy who is from that area, who Devontae Smith told me once was a father figure to him. His ties there, obviously strong. And Nick Saban, obviously, having coached at LSU and recruited Louisiana forever, all those things combined made it tough on LSU with Sopcher. And that was a big win there down the stretch, because if Bama didn't add him, then the perception would have all been kind of negative, even though Bama maintained verbal commitments who were looking elsewhere, like Byron Young, who may be better than Ishmael Sopcher, and then Keelan Robinson, the scat back out of Washington, D.C., who was fresh off of an official visit to USC. So it was a strong day for Bama, obviously, clinching the number one class. Hard to look negatively about it, but some people did. Because of some of the bubble guys that Bama didn't end up with. But obviously, number one speaks for itself.
We're talking to John Garcia of 24/7 Sports. You know, John, when you look at the entire picture of recruiting in the Southeastern Conference, and we're going to concentrate on the SEC. I know that everybody, and I think including 24/7, I think you guys picked Georgia second, and I think that's legitimate. But I think the one that's made the most headway, and Mark, you and Corey can agree or disagree here, I think the person that you better keep your eye on, because he's got so many resources, because he's got the facilities, and he's got, there's nothing going to be held back in College Station. You better keep your eye on Jimbo Fisher, because I think he is the biggest threat as a recruiter and as a staff and as a facility and all the intangibles. I think you better keep your eye on Texas A&M, because I think they're going to make the most progress over the next 5 years in trying to knock Alabama off the top in the West.
Yeah, and it was kind of – they had kind of a year like Alabama where they signed so many great prospects in December that they didn't have a lot of fireworks on Wednesday. But top 10 class, one of the best in the SEC, right there with LSU and Georgia and Bama, in the state of Texas, where everybody still recruits in the SEC because of that A&M addition. I think this is going to be right what you said. I mean, this is, you talk about a head coach recruiter, especially now that Urban Meyer is gone, at least for this cycle. When you rank the head coach recruiters, I mean, how many can you get to without getting to Jimbo Fisher? What is it, 2, 3 maybe at the most? So with his resume, he's a national champion. And like you said, he's got the resources. He understands the SEC, and he literally has experience from Texas all the way down to Florida. So that's the SEC corridor, and that's what he's going to master on. And the real questions, I think, were on the opposite side. The real questions with Jimbo Fisher were, how well is he going to do in Texas because of maybe a lack of resources there initially? And, you know, they've got the number one class out of all the schools in Texas, and that always means that you sign kids from the Lone Star State, and they did a really good job with that. DeMarvin Leal is arguably the top player in the country. He was in our discussion along with Alabama signee Antonio Alfano, who actually was the final number one player. That was a guy Bama was going all in to try to flip because of that need we just talked about on the defensive line. But he was able to hold off Nick Saban and company for a guy who we see as a first-round draft pick one day, and they've got a bevy of other prospects. But, you know, in-state, they did the best job, including Texas, which was so hot at the end of the regular season with their late stride, beating Oklahoma this year. Even still, A&M was 6 or 7 spots higher in the rankings in recruiting. So there's no doubt that Jimbo's already doing what we expected him to do over a 3 or 4 year period. He did that with his first full class in 2019. So Jimbo's there to stay. I think Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Texas A&M, I think you're going to have trouble keeping at least 2 or 3 of those out of the top 5 every single class. And this SEC dominance that other people may be tired of, I don't know if it's going to go away anytime soon, other than the Clemson Tigers.
All right, we're talking to John Garcia of 24/7 Sports. John, we're going to hold you over. We may hold you over for 2 more segments to talk about this because it's so good. We'll be back right here on Radio Alabama with John Garcia of 24/7 Sports.
Live on the Prep Sports Report Radio Network, it's the Prep Sports Report, presented by Alpha Insurance. Call or text the Prep Sports Report at 251-343-0106 on the CNC Financial and Auto Sales Communication Lines. Now, back to the show.
Back in high school.
All right, back to PSR. Radio Alabama, all of our friends across the Southeast. Appreciate our buddies up at the Doubletree Hotel in Manhattan. Got a text from a few minutes ago, said, talking SEC football, what about the Big 10, the Big 12, and all those big schools? We just talk SEC right here, guys. That's what we do. So we'll keep doing that. You guys up there just keep unloading that luggage and making those tips in the Doubletree. I know you got big things going on. You go to Broadway shows all the time. We just go to casinos to watch big bands. That's all we do. So you guys have fun up there, and we sure do miss talking to you guys. Look forward to seeing you soon. Talking to John Garcia, 24/7 Sports, and John covers it about as well as anybody that we know, and he's got big compliments from a lot of our buddies along the way that have certainly know exactly what's going on in this business. But John, we have a our producer here is a huge Tennessee Vol fan, and two teams that I thought really made some headway were the Tennessee Vols and the Florida Gators. Talk just a little bit about what Jeremy Pruitt did, and he did it kind of Saban way. He just kind of laid low and didn't make a whole lot of comments. But is this the class that will kind of lead the Vols back into SEC East contention?
Well, when I think of how you change a culture and how you mix it up, you know, it's the SEC. It's like you just talked about. This is what we do down here. And where does that start? Especially from the Saban perspective, it starts up front. It starts up front, and you look at the offensive line haul that Tennessee was able to put together. Wanya Morris, Darnell Wright, depending on where you look, two five-star type guys, two All-American type guys who had their pick of any school they wanted to go to.
Yeah.
And they both elected to play at Tennessee, and I would be surprised if one or both of those guys didn't start day one running out of the tee at Neyland Stadium. I think when you change a culture, this is where it starts. For Pruitt, SEC guy, Bama guy, that's what he knows, starting up front. It's a cliche, but we don't talk about it as much as we used to because of how wide open all these things are nowadays, but he's going old school with it. Pro style, big up front, go from there. And these two are maulers. They can both play guard, maybe tackle down the line. Just massive frames on each of these guys. Played great competition. Wanya at high school, Grayson High School in Georgia. Darnell Wright in the postseason circuit as an All-American and held his own. I don't think there's a more aggressive offensive lineman in the country than Darnell Wright. So, and he's, you know, 6'5", 320. So I think physically he can hold his own in the SEC day one, which is really hard to project. So I think their class was unbelievable. They beat blue bloods all over the place for prospects. And what's impressive about getting a guy like Darnell Wright as well as Henry Toto'o, you did it out of state. You did it in places where Tennessee doesn't mean the same thing that it means like in Atlanta or in the Carolinas where they've had a lot of recruiting success. Henry Toto'o is from De La Salle, California.
Yeah,
and Darnell Wright's from West Virginia where, you know, prospect-wise, there's, you know, you get a Randy Moss once every decade maybe, and then there's a Darnell Wright once a decade, and that's kind of it. So to go out there and do it, I think really speaks to what Pruitt is selling about the future and how soon these guys can help change the course of Tennessee football. So those guys to finish up, I think was a huge statement. 2 years in a row now for Jeremy Pruitt. He did the same thing last year, and I know there's not a lot of in-state guys there for Tennessee, but that class isn't as strong in state, and I think that's another mark of a good SEC recruiter. You don't recruit the state just to recruit the state. You recruit the state when those kids are worthy enough to put your uniform on, and I don't think at the top it was quite as orange and white as it should have been in terms of perception. But I think 2020, this class coming up, that state has a lot more talent at the top, and I think you'll see a lot more kids staying in state, especially if things start to change on the field.
Do you think, John, on the Henry Toto'o, the guy was a tremendous linebacker, but he had been an Alabama guy for a long time, and parents and family all wanted him to go to Alabama. Do you think the changeover in coaching staff kind of led him away from out? Because it was mainly him that was kind of not wanting to go to Alabama and then eventually signing with Tennessee.
Yeah, I think the Tosh LePoy departure, that was one where it was almost a straight up kind of situation. If you keep Tosh, you probably get him.
Yeah.
If you don't, you probably don't get him. And I think the timing of it, I think the day the report surfaced of LePoy going to the Cleveland Browns, that day was the first day of a 48-hour official visit that he was on at Tennessee. So the timing of it, I think, was just, whether it was orchestrated or not, it fell right into Tennessee's lap. They closed extremely well with a young group of recruiters, not only Jeremy Pruitt, but Brian Niedermeyer was arguably the best assistant coach recruiter in the country. He's another guy who came from Bama with Pruitt, who's now coaching on that Tennessee staff. He was big there. They were ready to be a strong number two for him all the way through the process, just in case something like this happened. And you know, Lupoi leaves, and then everything starts to shift. Now, Bama got him on campus the following weekend, but it just wasn't the same. It wasn't the same pull that he had with Tennessee, and that rapport with Lupoi, I think, was really the X factor. I mean, Lupoi went to De La Salle, same high school that Henry is coming out of. Tennessee's got a guy on that staff who came from that high school as well. So even in terms of familiarity and West Coast recruiting prowess, once Lupoi was gone following the departures of Lane Kiffin the last couple of years, Bama's West Coast, you know, vibe is kind of slowing down. Bama didn't sign one kid from California in this class for the first time in, I think, three or four cycles. So it's kind of shifting a little bit with Alabama, and Tennessee is adding resources out that way, and obviously it all worked out with Henry Toto'o. But I do think this one was very simple. If you have Tosh, you get him.
Right.
If you don't, he probably goes to the SEC elsewhere.
And you look in Mobile, Alabama's backyard, you look at Ladarius Cox. He was on Tennessee for a while. Auburn made the late push, winds up going to Ole Miss. Also, DJ James establishing the West Coast connection and committing to Oregon to play football for Coach Cristobal. Those were kind of two shockers in our backyard. And preferred walk-ons, you look at Flip Rudolph from Cottage Hill and Jermaine Brown, who were also phenomenal players here locally along the Gulf Coast, had a lot of success. Talk to us about what you know about those guys.
Yeah, well, you know, Cox, I thought a lot of people expected him to flip from Tennessee. I was in that group, but I thought it would be Auburn. I thought that's where he would flip to. But Ole Miss reminding us that they can close a little bit, too. They got five-star running back Jerrion Ealy. They flipped Ladarius Cox. They got a junior college linebacker, Lakia Henry, who was also a one-time Tennessee Vol commitment. So Ole Miss closed well down the stretch. I think they've got a lot of ties to the state of Alabama. They signed a bunch of kids from the state, as they typically do. Tyler Siski, Freddie Roach on that coaching staff. So when you're talking about D linemen, I think that was where Cox was really leaning towards. He wants to play D line. I project him down the road as an offensive lineman. I think he's got a higher ceiling there. But the kid wants to play on defense, which is a very common thing, and I think Ole Miss really hammered that point, and there was some doubt at Auburn and Tennessee whether or not he would flip over to the other side of the ball. So recruiting has a lot of layers, and I think Ole Miss got Cox with that one. And then DJ James, you know, Alabama was in and out on the kid. Mississippi State pushed hard, but he had so many other options because he didn't sign in December, excuse me, that you know, he really was a nationwide recruit, and he took that official visit to Oregon, and he knew that was it. He wanted something different. He wanted something off course, and you know, he's a DB. The flash of Oregon is pretty nice for guys like that, and we know Mario Cristobal and company from their ties to the Southeast. They want kind of the perfect blend of West Coast elites, California, Washington, et cetera, mixed in with the mentality and the prowess of Southeastern prospects. So they're going to recruit Alabama hard. They're going to recruit Florida hard. They're going to recruit Georgia. And they signed prospects from each of those three states. So they're trying to, kind of like Tennessee, change their culture. And they ended up signing the best class they've ever signed in the 20 years that, you know, our industry has really been out there. And then with those preferred walk-ons, I mean, man, you know, those are looked down upon a little bit because it's not a scholarship day one, but how many times, I mean, you watch college football, you watch college game day, every week there's 6-7 guys getting scholarships who weren't on scholarships. So these kids see those things, and they know they have a shot. If they do what they believe in themselves to do, they will be on scholarship. And we've seen guys like that, like Baker Mayfield, pan out pretty good. And I think some of those guys really can turn the corner and make us wonder a couple years from now, how in the world did school X not sign that kid on scholarship and they let him go to school Y and be a PWO? Those are always sort of puzzling down the stretch, particularly with some in-state FBS schools locally and semi-locally that make you scratch your head. But hey, the kids are betting on themselves, and you always got to respect them.
Hey, John, let's hold you over for one more segment. We'll round this up, okay?
Sounds good.
We'll be back with more PSR right here from Mobile, Alabama, talking SEC football.
KSR is live every Saturday from 8 until 10 a.m. Now, back to your hosts, Rick Cleveland, Mark Lasseter, and Corey LaBounty.
All right, welcome back to Prep Sports Report. We're talking to John Garcia of 24/7 Sports, and we're talking SEC football. But I do want to ask this because I think, John, if I'm not mistaken, you're pretty doggone familiar with what's going on in Miami as well, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Miami, and my family makes sure that I keep up with what's going on down there, and they had a lot of questions this time around.
I think one of the things that surprised most of us is I think all of us are big Mark Richt fans as far as a person is concerned and the way he runs a program and his sudden retirement and Manny Diaz taking the Temple job and all of a sudden turning around and, you know, resigning there and coming home to Miami. And I think all of that was kind of interesting to all of us, but they stepped into here in Daphne, Alabama, and got a defensive back that everybody thought was committed to Alabama, but ends up Christian Williams inks with Manny Diaz and the Miami Hurricanes. Did that surprise you?
Yeah, you know, we started, you know, he took the official visit a couple weeks before signing day, and we were hearing that everything was going well, but the position of his trips had him taking one to LSU just days before signing day, and we knew LSU really wanted the kid, and we, you know, LSU's had a nice corridor to Mobile here in the last few cycles, and he's a DB, right? So it all just kind of seemed like a layup for LSU, but, you know, about Tuesday, so 24 hours out, we started hearing, hey, you know, the kid might be headed to Miami. He wants to do something different, and he wants to kind of be the guy. And Miami had struggled with defensive back recruiting here recently, and LSU, of course, hasn't. So, you know, the opportunity, I think, was a 180 from between LSU, Alabama, and Miami in the defensive backfield. And I think if playing time was a priority and if doing something different also was, then it was a slam dunk for Christian, and that's what he did. You know, he was really respectful through the process. He called LSU Tuesday and said, hey, you know, I think I'm going to Miami. And Alabama had long known that he wasn't going to sign there. So, you know, a big get for Miami and a needed get for Miami. Like, I mean, heck, any guy you sign who has a chance to play early is massive. And look, the ACC, I mean, they got to – if they make it to the ACC title game, it's probably going to be Trevor Lawrence sitting on the other side. So any blue chip, all-American defensive back you can put on your roster is going to help with that tough task. So that was big for Miami. Didn't have the best close, but he ended up being kind of the gem of their class. And it's always good to see traditional powers, if anything, come back into Alabama and recruit well. And the last DB they signed from the state ended up starting several years, and he's going to play in the NFL. Michael Jackson out of Spain Park High School in Birmingham. He'll hear his name called here in a few months. So it's always good to see schools coming back into Alabama, and with some coaching turnover, we're seeing Oregon, Miami, Kansas with Les Miles, Louisville, a lot of other schools coming into Alabama to recruit, which is, for me, is always kind of a welcome sight because, you know, they can't all go to Alabama, Auburn, and even stay in the SEC.
You know, Coach, there was a guy that I kept up with a pretty good bit was Neil Brown leaving, going to West Virginia. He was at Troy, as you know, and I'm just wondering, how did they finish up? How did they close out? I know it was right in the middle of the recruiting season for him, so it must have been tough.
Yeah, it's similar to Manny Diaz. You know, there was weeks left in the cycle, so always hard, and I think even harder, really, for Neil Brown because there was less familiarity. Like you guys said, Miami's home for Manny, right? not the case for Neil Brown. But all things considered, he did well. You know, a lot of West Virginia fans focus on the fact that they didn't keep Darnell Wright home, the five-star we talked about who ended up at Tennessee. But other than that, I think they closed pretty well. They got guys that in the past have made West Virginia successful. Skill guys who can win one-on-one matchups, and of course they dipped into Alabama as well, which you sort of expect now going forward with the ties to the state of Alabama with Neil Brown and company. So I think they had a strong close, relatively speaking, again, with the asterisk that they didn't get Darnell Wright. But on such short notice, I don't know what those fans truly expected. I look for West Virginia to have a very strong class with a lot of Southern influence for 2020. So the kids who are rising seniors, now that Neil Brown can get his footing and have an entire cycle to recruit. I just think it's so hard for these guys going to new places with such short notice, and right. especially when you had another gig. If you're Les Miles and you go to Kansas, it's really a fresh start, and you can kind of go all in from the jump. But if you're Neil Brown, you're navigating former commitments. Which Troy targets do you emphasize? Really hard to navigate, in addition to new territories and a new part of the country. So I thought he did a nice blend of each, and I really liked the corner they got out of Montgomery. Tecori Turner had some academic issues late in the cycle, made it a little bit dicey, but 6'2", 185, really competitive kid who can play corner, and if all else fails, definitely has some ability as a safety. And in the Big 12, I mean, heck, you need as many good long DBs That's with ball right. skills as you can, and he's that. So I thought that was a really nice get back home, a former Troy commitment, so that sort of fit.
We're speaking with John Garcia Jr. from 24/7 Sports. I call him the football recruiting guru. You look forward to class of 2020 now. You just mentioned some of those guys here locally along the Gulf Coast. Demoy Kennedy, the linebacker from Theodore, will probably pop right off on you. Chris Abrams Drain is another one from Spanish Fort who will be highly recruited from right here along the Gulf Coast. And you know, it goes even further. St. Paul's and Saraland have a lot of local players that are right in the loop. Jordan Ingram, the running back from St. Paul's. Daniel Foster Allen, who verbally committed to Auburn here recently. Talk to us about the 2020 prospects across the state of Alabama in these last 3 minutes that we have with you.
Yeah, you know, I think 2020 and especially 2021, and we'll get to that, you know, next year, Mobile is going to be kind of on the come up, on the rebound. It's been a little up and down the last few cycles, but I think 2020 is really going to be starting to turn the corner down there, just in terms of in-state recruiting and in terms of what we expect from Mobile. And I think those guys you mentioned are all certainly in that conversation. One of the guys I think is going to be a big riser is Jordan Ingram. I think he is so intriguing. 6'3", what, 205 right now. A very good running back, but you know, his brother's 6'5" basketball player. Jordan tells me he's a better basketball player than Dazon up at Alabama. So how tall does he get? Just the Derrick Henry conversation is going to happen at some point with Jordan Ingram. A lot of schools thought Derrick Henry could be an All-American outside linebacker, but Jordan's already as tall as Derrick. So what happens in the next year or so as he continues to grow? Can he be a jumbo running back or an H-back, maybe even an outside linebacker? I think the athleticism and overall package he brings is so interesting, and his recruitment could come down to what Derrick Henry did. Which schools are going to let me run the football and which schools aren't? It was that simple at points for Derrick. So I'm really curious to see physically how Jordan Ingram matures, and he's a darn good ball player, even if he is just a running back. So I think that alone can get him into the SEC. I know Auburn wants him to play that position. So he's going to be a guy I'm really focused on. You mentioned St. Paul's. They've got a bunch of dudes in 2020 with Foster Allen, Brady Ward, 6'7", offensive lineman, SEC legacy, who Oklahoma just offered and is pushing for. I'm hearing Clemson is very interested in him. So he's a guy we're going to be talking about a lot more going forward in 2020. You mentioned Drain. You know, when are the in-state schools going to push there? Longtime LSU commitment, for my money, the most explosive offensive player in the state, even if you included the 2019 guys who just signed on Wednesday. He's one I'm very focused on. Can he play corner elsewhere? That's kind of the X factor for his recruitment. I think he's got some nice corner ability with that explosion as well. So 2020, I think, is going to be really strong down there, and there's kids emerging every day. Baldwin County's got a couple of guys. Albany Casey, I'm a big fan of, a big strong side defensive lineman who can really hold the point and rush the passer on occasion. You need that in the SEC. Looking for his recruitment to uptick as well. So I'll be very focused on Mobile in 2020. I'll be down there a bunch. I may have to come through and say hi to you guys.
You know what, and I'm going to add a name to that, and one that you probably don't have on your radar, but I think you should have it on there. He's a young man by the name of Will Breedland at UMS Wright. We've been doing this, Mark and I, you could put us together. We've been doing this for 80 years, and I think this is a kid that can play for a lot of people. And I hope you'll put his name on there because he's one that's a special, special player. He can play a lot of different positions. He's playing an inside linebacker at UMS, but he comes from a quality program. They know nothing but winning, and he's some kind of player, John. I can tell you that. He'll be something
special. Yeah, we like him at the Super 7, and as productive a linebacker as anybody in the state as a junior. So once you get the measurables and see him in a camp setting and what he can do in space, I think he's a guy whose stock is only going to rise because of the foundation he's got there with Terry Curtis and company. Absolutely. Good call.
John, thank you so much. You are the guy that we want to talk to when it comes to recruiting, and we certainly appreciate you, and God send, God bless you, and we look forward to talking to you down the road, pal.
Too kind, fellas, and likewise. Take care of yourself.
All right.
Thank you,
God
buddy.
Bless.
Thanks,
we'll
John.
We'll see you soon, John. That's John Garcia. You can catch him at 24/7 Sports, and, you know, when the people that we respect the most tell us, Coach, that's the guy you want to talk to, then that's who we go after. Good job, Corey. We'll be back with the faith segment, the Camp Grace segment, one that you speak highly of, right here on Prep Sports Report.
This segment of the Prep Sports Report brought to you by Camp Grace. Now back to Coach Rick Cleveland.
Camp Grace is located in West Mobile and is the summer home of Camp Rapahope, Camp Mash, Camp Smile, and Camp Sugar Falls, as well as the home of Outback Mobile and is shared by many other community organizations throughout the Mobile area. Camp Grace is a place where God's love is bestowed freely upon others, the true definition of God's grace.
I was going to share with y'all a story today. It's called The Crack Pot, and you have to listen to it for a little bit to catch on to the story. It's a little lengthy, so hang with me. A water bearer in India had two large pots, each hung on the ends of a pole that he carried across his neck. One of the pots had a crack in it, while the other pot was perfect and always delivered a full portion of water. At the end of the long walk from the stream to the house, the cracked pot arrived only half full. For 2 years, this went on daily, with the bearer delivering only 1.5 pots of full water to the house. Of course, the perfect pot was proud of its accomplishments, perfect for what it was made of, but the poor pot was ashamed of his own imperfection and miserable that it was able to only accomplish half of what it had been made to do. After 2 years of what it perceived to be bitter failure, the cracked pot spoke to the water bearer one day by the stream. "I'm ashamed of myself, and I want to apologize to you. I've been able to deliver only half my load because the crack in my side causes water to leak out all the way back to the house. Because of my flaws, you don't have to go do all this work, and you don't get a full value of all your efforts." The bearer said to the pot, "Did you notice that where the flowers on your side of the path but not on the other pot's side? That's because I've always known about your flaw, and I planted flower seeds on your side of the path. Every day while we walked back, you've watered them for 2 years. I've been able to pick these beautiful flowers to decorate the table. Without you, just the way you are, there would not be any, but not be this beauty to grace our house." As we were talking today about all kinds of, you know, things going on with coaches and players and organizations, we talked about Emmanuel Bell. We talked about guys that are going to play at the next level. And all of these different things that we've talked about. And I read this story the other day, and I'm sitting there thinking while we're doing this, this is what high school coaches, in my opinion, and youth league coaches and ministers at churches and youth pastors and counselors, every one of us is meant to do. Every one of us has been on a team of some sort. This crack pot was part of a team.
Yeah.
That's what it was. It's part of a team. And everybody's on part of that team is not the same. Every person in that has good things that they're going to bring to the table and bad things they're going to bring, or things they're just not as good at. I shouldn't say bad things. Some folks are going to bring more. Some folks will bring less. But every one of them can contribute in one way, shape, or form. The crackpot here was doing a job while he thought he was failing. In essence, he was creating something very beautiful. As a coach and as a father and as a friend, as a son, husband, I don't see that enough. I think about my failures and dwell upon that too much. And we, you know, and it's good to know you have limitations and things you can and can't do and you do well. But always know somebody can see, if somebody can see you for what you really are, there's always going to be a good part of that deal. And that's what I got from the story. And it's just so true. Any team situation, which we are all a part of in some way, shape, or form, there's always going to be the crackpot. And that crackpot has always got a role.
You know, Mark, that's so pertinent in so many different venues today. You telling that story reminded me of something I heard yesterday as I was driving to Diane's. I heard a guy say, you can't go forward looking in the rearview mirror. And so many times in life, as coaches, we try to go forward and we're dealing with what happened behind us. And the most important thing that we do as coaches is deal with young people, have relationships with our players. And I see so many quality men and women in our area that have those relationships with our players. And not only with our players, but with our students. And that's such a joy to me, because I think about some men, and I was really thinking about Bill Clark the other day and how well they've done at UAB, but I think about the relationship as I watched him at Prattville in a situation where it's not a bed of roses. Mm-mm. It really wasn't when Bill got there, and the relationships he developed at Prattville and the way that community rallied around him, and he just became a favorite son. And then I look at places here in Mobile. I look at places like your buddy out at Theodore, the man that coached with you with Eric, and the job that Eric Collier does at Theodore, the relationships that he builds there. It's wonderful to watch that. I think of the job that Ann Schilling does with her players and the relationships. The job that Emmanuel Bell did, as we've talked about today, at Winona, the relationships. You know, a lot of those pots were broken before these people got there, but those pots, even though they spread goodwill, they weren't able to nourish them. But when these people came in, they've nourished them. It's such a joy to be able to see that from the perspective that we see it. Corey, you see it all the time. You see it all the time, and I hear it from you. You're one of those guys that permeates that. You're one of the guys that talks about the good that you see, and so much of it in basketball and women's basketball. And that's such a joy to even when I talk to you on the phone, Corey, to hear those things that you say, that the blessings. Even as you go through your struggles, Corey, I hear that. I hear that. Well, that's a joy to me and us here.
It's important, like Coach Lazarus said, for that crackpot to play its role in growth, because the sun sometimes is able to get into that cracked pot and it allows it to grow into, like you say, bloom into something beautiful. And you just apply that to your everyday life through our own flaws as coaches and players, and just allow that growth. When there is a crack, when there is a flaw, you work on those flaws, you work on that crack to mend those, and it just turns into something beautiful when you're able to do so.
Guys, I want to tell you what a blessing it's been to be back here. You know, when you're away from you guys the last 2 weeks, it's been a joy for us to go to Samford and to do that. But missing you guys and hearing you, and to hear Dalt as he presents on here It's been a blessing, and I want you to know how special it is to be back in here with you. I'll miss you again next Saturday, my final trip to Birmingham.
Be safe, brother.
But I'll be listening, and we'll be listening as we travel. But what a joy and what a blessing that you two guys are, and thank you for that. For all you folks out there listening, thank you for all the comments that you make. We appreciate all the words, kind words you say. We want to keep you abreast of everything going on in high school sports throughout the state and the Southeast. Remember this, no matter what you do, no matter where you go, He is always with you.